Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, we're pleased to welcome Yaffa Epstein to the program. Yaffa will be discussing some thoughts on Pesach. Yaffa Epstein is a faculty member at Pardes and serves as a director of recruitment for Pardes as well. And now, Yaffa Epstein.
Thank you, Larry. As we are preparing our homes and ourselves for Pesach, one major question continues to plague us. What is the significance of this chametz, of this unleavened bread that we are removing from our homes? In the book of Leviticus, chapter 2, amidst the discussion of the korban mincha, the meal offering, we are told some very interesting laws about chametz. Leviticus, chapter 2, verse 11 states, Kol ha-mincha asher takrivu la-Hashem, lo te'aseh chametz. Every mincha offering, every meal offering, which is offered to God, do not make it chametz. Do not make it leavened, because anything fermented or any honey may not be burnt as a fire offering to God. In the midst of a chapter of laws that deal with specifically making a meal offering, we're told that despite the fact that we're creating an offering for God out of flour, wheat, etc., we do not allow that mixture to become chametz. We do not allow it to become leavened in any way. We don't add anything, any fermenting agents to it. We don't add honey. We don't add anything that will allow this dough to become chametz, to become leavened in any way. And this is in fact true for every offering in the temple, that it is not allowed to become chametz. So we're not allowed to ever offer any chametz on the altar. There are two notable exceptions to this rule. The first is the shtei halechem, the two loaves that are brought on the festival of Shavuot to signify new crops, new grain products, the rebirth of our crops and the bringing of those crops to God. And the second is the korban todah, one of the kinds of peace offerings that are offered in the temple. The korban todah is a thanksgiving offering which is brought to thank God for wonderful things that have happened in our lives. Rashi explains that the korban todah was offered when a person wanted to thank God for a specific miracle that happened to them, for a specific act of grace on the part of God in terms of freeing us from something we had been stuck in, etc. And the korban todah contains several interesting laws, one of which is that it must be eaten with bread. And the kinds of bread that it must be eaten with is very interesting, in that it contains a combination of both matzah and chametz. That both loaves of matzah, of unleavened bread, are eaten together with loaves of chametz, loaves of leavened bread. And the ratios there become very important to us. We're told that you must eat the korban todah with 40 loaves of bread, 30 of which are matzah, are unleavened, and 10 of which that are leavened loaves. Interestingly, the Korban Pesach, the sacrifice that is offered on Passover Eve, is actually very similar to a Korban Todah. So what we're talking about is the Paschal Lamb that is offered on the eve of Passover has many similar characteristics to that of a Korban Todah, which we described earlier, this Thanksgiving offering. The two notable qualities that both the Korban Pesach, the sacrificial lamb for Passover, and the Korban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, share are that they must be eaten on that day and that evening. In other words, the entire offering must be completely eaten by the group. It's eaten by the person who brings the offering. Must be completely eaten by the group that brings the offering before the next day. So that day and that evening. And it must be eaten with bread. As I mentioned earlier, the Korban Todah is eaten with both chametz and matzah loaves. And interestingly, the Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, is only eaten with, as we know, matzah. Right, we have a very explicit commandment that says you eat the sacrificial meat during the night, roasted, and you must eat it with matzah. That's a verse from Exodus chapter 12, verse 8. Right, you must eat the sacrificial meat during the night, and you must eat it with matzah and maror, with matzah, unleavened bread, and these bitter herbs. That is how we eat the Korban Pesach. So what we're seeing here is, again, the Korban Pesach has all of these similar characteristics as a Korban Todah has as well. Now, it makes complete sense. If we understand that a Korban Todah actually is brought to specifically commemorate and thank God for miracles that happen to us in our life, that it makes sense that a Korban Pesach would take on similar character traits of that Korban Todah. In other words, if a Korban Todah is about saying, God, thank you so much for taking me out of slavery, for taking me out of jail, for allowing me to cross the desert, all of these very important miracles that have happened to me personally in my life, many of those miracles happened to the Jewish people on a national level as well. We were taken out of slavery, we crossed the desert, etc. So it makes sense to think about the Korban Pesach fitting into the rubric of the Korban Todah. However, what's interesting is that there is a very significant difference between the Korban Todah and the Korban Pesach. Even within the similarity that it must be eaten with bread, the Korban Todah is eaten both with chametz and with matzah, whereas the Korban Pesach is only eaten with matzah, only eaten with unleavened bread. So why is that? Why is it that the Korban Pesach simultaneously has the qualities of a Korban Todah, that we're thanking God, that we're praising God, that we are eating it just that day and into the night, and that we're eating it with bread, and yet, on the other hand, the Korban Pesach takes on the qualities of any other Korban, any other sacrifice in the temple, as we said previously, that there is no chametz offered, right? Only matzah may be offered with the Korban Pesach, right? Just like every other sacrifice in the temple. Now, interestingly, the Sforno, who is a commentator on the Torah, comments on the Korban Todah. He speaks about why is it that actually there is chametz offered with the Korban Todah. Why is that? Why is it that every other sacrifice we don't have chametz, but specifically the Korban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, is offered with chametz? Why is that? It's very unique, and he speaks about that, and he explains that essentially, despite the fact that the Korban Todah is in the category of the lesser level of sanctity sacrifices, the kodshim kalim, those sacrifices that belong to a lesser level of sanctity, nevertheless, it has unique character traits, and each one of the kodshei kalim, each one of the different kinds of lower category sacrifices have their own elements. And the Korban Todah's unique point, as we said, is that bread is brought with it, including leavened loaves. The Sforno has a very interesting comment and description of the Korban Todah. And he says that the Korban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, is, as we said previously, one of the kinds of peace offerings that can be offered. However, he says it has a unique characteristic. And he says as follows, She'inim hem al odot hoda'ah, that if this offering is being offered because of thanks, as a Thanksgiving offering, ye'imahem lechem, there should be with it bread, and within this bread is a kind of bread that has chametz, has leaven. Ki omnam sibat ha-sakana asher aleha ha-hoda'a, hu se'or shebe'isa. Because the reason why there was danger in the first place that you had to be removed from was because of this concept of se'or shebe'isa. In other words, the Sforno says like this, very interestingly, he says that the reason why we were in danger in the first place was because of this thing called leaven or fermenting in the dough. And then he goes on, he continues. But what's important for us to understand is that this, according to the Sforno, what's really happening here is he's saying that, yes, the Korban Todah represents us being freed from some sort of sakana, from some sort of danger. However, what put us into the danger in the first place is this leaven in the dough. And he's quoting, actually, a piece of Talmud from Masechet Brachot, from Tractate Brachot, which basically quotes an important rabbi who says that the reason why the Jewish people are not serving God properly is because of the Se'or Shebe'isa. And Rashi there comments on the Gemara, and he says that what does Se'or Shebe'isa mean? Se'or Shebe'isa means that the Yetzer Hara, that which is preventing us from behaving properly. So in other words, going back to the Sforno, what he's saying is the entire reason we were in the danger in the first place is because of if we understand it the way that Rashi does, we're talking about the Seor Sheba Isa. We're talking about the Yetzer Hara. So in other words, the Sforno is saying, when I bring a Korban Sodah, when I bring a Thanksgiving offering, I bring bread, but the bread that I bring is mixed. I have both 30 loaves of matzah, 30 loaves of unleavened bread, just like all other sacrifices, I have unleavened bread, but I also bring the chametz, I also bring the leaven. Why? Because the leaven reminds me that actually, part of why I was in the situation I needed to be saved from was because of my own yetzer hara, because of my own lack of being able to connect spiritually. That lack of being able to connect spiritually is what put me into the danger in the first place. So essentially, according to the Sforno, chametz represents this inability to connect spiritually, this inability to overcome my evil inclination and to connect to God. Now, the Sforno continues and he says, however, mikol makom mineha matzah rabot alav, still, when I offer a korban torah, I don't just want to bring chametz, I don't just want to bring my evil inclination to the table. Rather, I want to outweigh it. I want to say, no, there's more matzah than chametz. I want to say there's more of my actual thanking of God, my actual recognition of God, than there is of my recognition of my own humanity. I don't want to focus on that. I bring it because it's important for me to remember the danger that I may be in again of succumbing to my evil inclination, but I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on the matzah aspect, the aspect of thanking God, recognizing God being the one to save me, and focusing on my spirituality and my closeness to God. Now, what's interesting about this is we can take this lesson of the Sforno and apply it to actually our own experience with the matzah. Why? Because Korban Pesach becomes the Korban Todah that doesn't have any chametz. Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb that we offer on Passover Eve, becomes the Korban Todah supreme, right, if you will. It's a normal Korban Todah, it's a normal Thanksgiving offering, except that we allow it to transcend the regular Korban Todah in that we don't bring the chametz. We don't bring this memory of the evil inclination into the conversation on Passover Eve. And in effect, we basically say that the night of Passover has unique characteristics. It's not like every other night. So in effect, what we're essentially saying is the Korban Pesach allows us to go back to the Mikdash. If we understood that the Mikdash is a chametz-free zone, there's no chametz found in the Mikdash, then the Korban Pesach strengthens that statement and says, yes, I'm going to bring a normal Thanksgiving offering. I'm going to bring a regular Korban Todah, but I'm going to elevate it. It's not my normal Korban Todah where I still have some of my chametz in there, but rather it's my sort of Korban Todah plus I have a complete Thanksgiving offering where I don't focus on my own sakana, my own danger of succumbing to myself, but rather I focus on complete spirituality. What's interesting is that simultaneous to this idea of a Korban Pesach being completely spiritual, no chametz permitted, all matzah, not bringing the evil inclination into the conversation, but rather completely focusing on the matzah, we have the same idea in our own homes. That we have a commandment to not only to eat matzah and not to have chametz, but that we're not allowed to even have chametz in our own houses. And if we think about it, what we're saying there is that we remove all traces of chametz from ourselves before Passover begins. I'd like to bring an interesting piece from the Gemara, from the Talmud, which states a very interesting idea, which is we find in Masechet Pesachim, in the tractate of Pesachim, which deals with the laws of Passover, a conversation about how was it possible that the Jewish people offered sacrifices when they didn't have an altar. There's a conversation that, how did that happen? How could it be that they offered the Paschal lamb when they didn't have a temple, they didn't have an altar? How was it possible to offer a Paschal sacrifice? And there's an answer there from Rav Yosef. Okay, we're talking about Masechet Pesachim, Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, Tractate Pesachim 96a. And the conversation is discussed there. Rav Yosef taught a brayta as follows, right? Ve'od ha-tana Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is quoting the Tanaim before him, and he says, Shlosha mizbechot hayu sham. There actually were three altars in Egypt. Al ha-mishkof ve'ashdei ha-mezuzot. On the lintel and on the two doorposts. V'tu midi achrina lo hava. And more than this, there was not. And there was nothing else, no other altar on which they offered the sacrifice. In other words, when the Jewish people living in Egypt took their lambs to be slaughtered, they didn't have a temple and they didn't have an altar. Rather, each person took their own lamb, and each of those lambs was offered, as Rabbi Yosef says here, on the altar of their homes, right? On the mezuzah. When they took the blood and they put it on the doorposts, that putting the blood on the doorpost was actually their act of creating an altar. In other words, each one of their homes takes on the characteristics of the temple. Now, if we add to this, this idea that we've seen previously, that within the temple, there was no chametz allowed. No leavened bread was allowed to be offered in the temple. And you add to that this idea that how did they offer these sacrifices? How, in fact, did they offer the sacrifices of these paschal lambs? How did they do it? What we come to here is this idea that they had to get rid of the chametz from their homes. They had to take out all of the chametz from their homes. Why? Because they were going to offer the sacrifices in their own homes. In other words, each individual house became a temple. Now, if we think about this today for our own understandings and how what this could mean for us today, I think there's a very, very beautiful and deep message here, which is every year, spend time getting rid of leavened products from our homes and cleaning and making sure that no crumb is, in fact, found in our homes of chametz. And then we continued on to eat the matzah, to eat the unleavened bread. We have the same sort of process that the Jews went through in Egypt, that they simultaneously removed chametz from their houses and then offered up these sacrifices. In effect, what we're saying here is, in our lives as well, we have an opportunity to remove the chametz, remove, as we said in the Sforno, this evil inclination from ourselves, and be completely immersed in the matzah, completely immersed in the unleavened bread, which in effect represents our recognition and our awareness of God in our lives. And Pesach, in effect, transcends chametz. We have this opportunity here to say we're not going to be stuck in our old ways. We have an opportunity on Passover Eve to transcend, go further than we do normally when we're thanking God, go further than we do normally with a regular Korban Todah, and not have any chametz, to remove all traces of chametz from our houses and from our lives, from ourselves. And in effect, we're able to elevate our own personal lives, our own personal houses, through the removal of chametz to the level of the temple. In fact, the level of the Mikdash, where there's no chametz to be found, no chametz to be offered. And I bless us all that we have a very beautiful, happy, and kosher Pesach, where we are able to, in fact, elevate our lives and our spirituality to be completely focused on God, to be completely recognizing God as the performer of miracles in our lives, and elevate ourselves to the level of the temple. Chag Sameach. Have a happy Passover.
Thank you, Yaffa. Your thoughts on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your comments to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, have a great Pesach, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.